This is an interview with Sophie Rose by Caroline Pascoe with Katie Murphy recording for the Women's Information Service History Project at the State Library for South Australia on Wednesday the 6th of December 2017. Welcome, Sophie. Can you give us a brief overview of when and where you were born and grew up?
I was born in 1956 in Adelaide to parents of Greek background. My parents had migrated here in 1954, so were post-war migrants. And myself and my younger sister were actually born here, but they did actually come with three sisters who were born in Greece.
And how did you come to be working at, or volunteering, working you were at, as you started off as a paid staff member?
Yes. At the time, I'd left teaching and had actually been working in the Department of Local Government at the time that the vacancy for the position of Greek Information Officer had been advertised, and I applied for the position. And was successful in winning it, and I commenced work as the Greek Information Officer in about October 1985. And while I was there, I did at the time take a secondment to the Equal Opportunity Unit of the Central Agency for a period of time, and then when I returned, I actually worked in the policy side of the Women's Advisors Office. So at that time, the Women's Advisors Office had the policy unit and also had WIS as the service delivery to women in the community.
So you obtained the position as Greek Information Officer with the Women's Information Switchboard?
Yes, I did.
Switchboard or service?
It was actually called Switchboard then.
And where was it?
We were located in the Institute building in Kintore Avenue. And certainly at that time, we were open... It was 7 days a week. And we worked shifts, so we had... if you worked the afternoon shift, because we were open from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. At that time, so
7 days a week, 9 a.m. till 9 p.m.
Yes.
And what would your weekly shift look like in those days? Do you remember?
Oh, well, you'd have a combination of, you know, you might work. Generally, your afternoon shifts might have been like three shifts, so you might work. You know, you're 2 or 3 days, 9 till 5. I can't actually remember exactly what the shift was. And then the afternoon person usually start, I think, around 4 or 5 and then work through till 9. And so you'd normally have usually like your 3 days of your sort of afternoon or night shift, and that included weekends. So if you work, you know, the night shift on the weekend, then you'd have obviously you'd have your days off, and then your day shift and whatever, and can't exactly work out.
No, but you would be working Saturdays and Sundays.
Yes.
every so often.
Yes, absolutely.
And
yeah,
you left.
There was a roster.
Often left at 9 o'clock at
yes.
night.
Yes, we closed it.
Was there any concern about safety for women leaving at that time?
Well,
do you remember?
That is an interesting question, actually, because really at the time you were actually on your own in the building. And certainly in the room which comprised the offices of the service. And obviously when you're on your own, you'd lock the door. I presume at the time there was probably a security, not to the extent that we have it now, sort of day and night, I suppose, in buildings. But, yeah, it was... it wasn't, I don't think, an issue that seemed to be or have the degree of seriousness, I guess, in a way that it has today, which is really interesting. Might be a different sort of situation. We did have a duress button, so that and that was for any time if someone did walk in through the doors and there was any cause to have to press the button, obviously for assistance. So we knew we had that. I've honestly got to say, I think for myself, I mean, I did feel safe. It wasn't that I felt unsafe, but...
From time to time at Women's Information Services, as it is today, there are some disgruntled men who come in because they want to have their own service. You can't remember anything like that that happened?
Not specifically that I can remember, and I'm not suggesting that it didn't happen. I'm sure that it did happen. Fortunately, I didn't actually experience that myself. But when I started there, we had certainly particularly during the day. Obviously, there were the paid workers, there were the volunteers, there was lots of activity, lots of people coming and going. People would come in and meet with you. It wasn't just the telephone service, that was the bulk of it, of course. But I often had women of Greek background who spoke very little or no English, who would actually physically come in to talk to me and seek advice and assistance. Often I went to appointments now it's called Centrelink, but Social Security as it was back then, to virtually, I suppose, act a bit as an interpreter and to some degree, I suppose, a bit of an advocate, depending on what the issue was, or attend other appointments where women didn't feel confident, obviously, to go on their own. And I mean, at that time when I was working there, we could always also use the telephone interpreter service to organise, and we did organise interpreters so that we could assist women, in the language that they needed to speak. So we'd often set up those sorts of times as well. When I worked there as well, and I don't know if you know this, but the Italian information officer, who at the time that I was there was Louisa Sheehan. Louisa and I also had a weekly radio program on ethnic radio. So I'd go down to Byron Place, I believe it was, EBI, the community radio station, and really, I suppose, it was called Today's Woman. And we would do programs on various, a diversity of issues affecting women's lives, whether it was to do with health, legal stuff in relation to family law, changes in the law that affected women and so on. So Louisa did hers in Italian, and of course I did the program in Greek. It was a half-hour program. Sometimes, it might be that we were interviewing somebody in relation to some new service for women, or, some new... might have been a health worker, and the sort of service at that time we had... the first women's health centre, Adelaide Women's Health Centre, and we also worked closely with the health centre because the health centre as well had a Greek worker, an Italian worker, who also provided a service to women of non-English speaking background. That was the term we used at that time, in relation to health services. So we had a really good relationship with the health centre as well, and various other centres, you know, sort of that. I mean, at that time, obviously, there are many more services now, but at that time, they were fairly fledgling services, obviously, just as the Women's Information Switchboard was.
So did you set that program up, or did you just continue it?
That was actually had already, and I'm assuming that that had been set up. I'm not sure from the absolute beginning of the start of the service or whether, you know, but certainly the Greek information officer who'd left the service and I, took that position.
There was someone called Nikki or?
Nikki Dimitropoulos.
Nikki, yes. Dimitropoulos, yes.
She did also do the radio program as well, yeah.
When you started there, you started in 1985.
Yes.
Did you start as Sophie Rose?
No, I actually at the time did start as Sophie Alexiou in Greek. That was my married surname, and I did a few years later decide to change my surname, translating from the my surname from the Greek into the English, so that's where we've got Rose from.
And were you Sophie Rose at the Women's Information Switchboard at all, or had you left before you decided?
No,
I
actually was, by that stage, I was actually in the Women's Policy Office, so still part of the Women's Advisors Office, but not actually at WIS.
So getting back to that, just to clarify that, you started in 85 at Women's Information Switchboard, then you were seconded, and then you came back to Women's Information.
I didn't come back to Women's Information Switchboard, but I came back to the Women's Advisors Office. So the Women's Advisors Office had the switchboard under its umbrella and it had the policy office. So when I was due to come back, I was basically offered by the women's advisor to come back to the policy office, and obviously someone else had been appointed to backfill me and so on. So yes,
I'm thinking about Women's Information Service today, and not too many Greek women come in, or Italian women for that matter. Mm. Did you have a lot of Greek community?
Yes.
Did you do anything about getting them to come in? Were you going out into the community?
Well, yes, and it's interesting, I suppose. It's now where we have people migrating to Australia from different ethnicities, and when you think about it, really at that time, services to those European migrants who had come were really limited. So, in particular, services to women. So, places like the Women's Switchboard and the Women's Health Centre were, put it this way, word got out in the community, and that's really the major promotion just really happened by word of mouth. But things like the radio program, things like going to forums actually speaking to women. So at the health centre, for example, they may have set up a particular group so women, you know, would come along to the group. And whether it was a specific area of health, I'm not sure, but I do recall that there were women's groups, and there was probably the Greek worker did have Greek women attending, and so we'd often go along as well, and we'd talk about various things. So a lot of that community education happened that way, happened through the radio program, and you know,
maybe just with your community too, your family and your they would know because of that. I expect
absolutely,
that spreads out.
Absolutely,
it
does. Yeah, yeah, that's right. So, I think that's really how in the main, really people did get to know about us.
So I'm thinking when you left, when you went on secondment elsewhere and you didn't actually come back, that would have left a gap for Greek women. What happened?
Well,
it
didn't actually, because fortunately it that really created, a position for someone else to come into. So it wasn't ever left vacant. So another person did come in behind me.
Who was the Greek information
yes.
officer?
Okay. Yes.
And we had a Greek information officer, an Italian information
yes.
officer. Who was that, do you remember?
At the time that I was there, it was Louisa Sheehan.
Louisa Sheehan, yeah. She was the whole time.
And then
the Aboriginal...
Joe Wilmot, as the Aboriginal information officer, was there when I started. But we also created which was the Vietnamese information officer. So Lin Van
Nguyen,
yeah,
yes.
Started in that in that position. And I suppose, I've honestly got to say, I did leave the service. I went on and did further study and, you know, a different sort of career path, and then didn't come back to government till about 10 years ago. So I haven't really kept up with, you know, what positions are there now. And
well, things change so much,
yes,
do they?
Yes, of course. Yes.
Did you enjoy it, working there?
I did. I did very much. And also... you know, all of the women who work there, and also I include the volunteer women, you know, so committed and you know, really passionate. And it was a fantastic working environment. It was just wonderful to go to working with, you know, a bunch of fantastic women. And everyone obviously assisted everyone else. So what I didn't know, I just went and asked someone else, and so on. So it was truly a great environment. And I guess also I think certainly at that time, women working in that environment were also empowered. So. You know, I've sort of come from the feminism where information is power, and it was really, and women being able to help other women with that, I think also just felt really empowered by that, and we're wanting to empower women as well, you know.
So would you say that was the main consideration behind all of your dealings
with them,
empower them?
I had Greek women that, you know, came to the service who were experiencing domestic violence, and for a lot of women, and I'm sure there are a lot of women today who don't see a way out of that. I recall very well one particular woman who, you know, at the time she didn't drive a car, didn't have a driver's license, and, you know, came to the service looking for information and assistance about, you know, how she could actually change and obviously remove herself from that situation. Well, you know, sometime later when I saw that Greek woman, she was driving, she just felt her life, and she was so thankful for all of the support and assistance she'd received. Her life was so different, and she was, you know, as I say, completely empowered. And it was just great to see. So, this, you know, sometime later, you know, she'd come into the service, and I'm driving now. And you
she
know,
was a real domestic violence survivor.
She was.
Or domestic abuse survivor.
Yes, she was,
to be more
indeed.
Accurate, perhaps.
And I remember at the time that I worked there as well, because with the domestic violence service, I know I sat on the committee as the WIS rep for some time. So, you know, I mean, obviously the really difficult issues that people were dealing with. But you know, despite that, it was obviously you were doing something that had an incredible value and meaning, and to be part of that was yeah, really, really great. So.
Did you often get situations that you couldn't help that were too disastrous, and how did you feel after that?
Well, look, I think, you know, there are some situations. It's funny actually, because I'm thinking about another Greek woman who again was the victim of domestic violence, and what was interesting was that she could never see herself leaving that situation because. She was also very religious and believed that, really, that it was going to be up to any divine intervention to help her. Like, despite providing information and, you know, options for her, what she wanted was, almost in a way, someone to speak to her husband to say, you know, that God doesn't think that what you're doing is a good thing. You need to be looking after your wife and family. See, her view was that she couldn't leave that situation because that wouldn't be right, you know, in God's eyes. That God,
because she'd committed to God in the ceremony.
Well, because she, because she committed. You know, it was her view. That was what was the right thing to do, you know, culturally. And I understand that because culturally, you know, a woman would get beaten, but it was not the right thing culturally to leave that situation because she would be, well. If you look at it practically, a lot of women who were dependent on their husbands, because they were home with the children and raising the children, they didn't have economic independence. So certainly that was an impediment to leaving that situation. Their religion was very strong, and so they believed that being a good wife, they tried to be a good wife, and they believed their husband had to be a good husband because that's what the Bible said, etc. So you wouldn't be seen to be a good wife if you left a situation like that. I mean, in that sort of situation, you know, I think I realised that I could provide information, but I really didn't think that this particular woman was really in a place to take that on and to make that sort of, you know, value herself and think, well, this isn't right, you know, but to actually change that. So, you know, I mean, it's terrible, obviously, but there wasn't a lot really I could do about that. I just had to, you know, it's accepting, I suppose, where she was at and saying, but, you know, at least we've talked. She came to the service, you know. Mm. She actually attended in person and, you know, we sat down and we had that, you know, conversation. And quite different, obviously, to the previous woman that I referred to who really did change her life because she said, I'm not taking this anymore. And, yeah.
Can you get a sense of what, overall, what sort of women were coming in, young, old, ethnicities?
Yeah.
That
I think it was really, I suppose, a diversity. I won't say probably, as I recall it anyway, and especially, I suppose, in terms of Greek women, they were usually married women with families. I don't recall having young women, you know, sort of come to see me to talk about things, to be honest. But in terms of, and I think a range of ethnicities, like a lot of women walk through those doors. But I would say probably, like I say, either you know, women married with children and families to that sort of, you know, child rearing or having had the families and that sort of age group.
Was it a bustling sort of a place, or was it a quiet place?
It was a bustling place. Mm. It was quiet on. It was quiet at night time when I may have been the only one there, or the worker was the only one there. But sometimes the phones would go, and that was pretty busy. So you might be there for a time with, a volunteer or another person, whatever, for a while. But it was a bustling place. It was
noisy.
Yes, it definitely could be noisy. You know, you've got the sort of set up with tables and phones. I can't even remember how many we had, but quite a number. And phones are going, people are on the phone. So yes, it actually was noisy. It was all open space. So, I mean, the coordinator had an office, and I think the admin person was in an office. So I think there might have been a couple of offices. And we had another room which we used to have kind of meetings, or if we had groups happening in there. But in the actual area where we did the telephone and... sometimes you'd have to meet with someone out in that room because there wasn't an office to, you know, sort of go in and talk in quiet.
Would there be anything there for them? Coffee, tea, couch, toys for the children?
There were those sorts of things.
To make them feel comfortable,
yes,
that was the idea of that?
Yeah, there was. I mean, that's a pretty amazing building, the Institute building. I mean, it was a lovely space, and you could open the window and look out onto Kintore Avenue and the War Memorial across the street and so on. So, very high ceilings. But it was a welcoming place, which was great. So, Aboriginal women came in, of course. So, and that's the thing. I mean, you had a diversity of women and people would come in with kids. I don't recall seeing a lot of young women, though. I'm not saying they didn't come in, but it was generally, I think, women who were, you know, sort of, I don't know, I suppose 20 to 20 plus, you know, type thing.
You were talking about families, so you were saying they mostly came in with their children.
I think that also must have depended a bit on ethnicity, because, I mean, you know, I think Louisa certainly saw women similarly who, you know, had children and families and so on. So,
I know that you worked mostly without the internet. You had some sort of card system.
I don't think we had the internet then.
So did you... When did you actually go on your first secondment?
Oh, that was... I think that was about sometime 90 to sometime in 91. I can't remember the...
So you were 85. So you're there 6 years.
I was going to say... We did have, like, every call had to be recorded and attendance, and I remember we had these big sort of sheets, and they were kind of drawn up, and, you know, so, that, you know, the time of the call, that you asked for their name, you'd write in what it was about, what sort of action or advice or information you gave. So that was how we recorded... attendance.
Did you record where they were from, their postcode or anything? Was that important to you?
Actually, I don't recall taking addresses unless there was a reason to do so.
So confidentiality would have been.
I think, but on the phone in particular, it was. And I mean, some people didn't want to give their name.
Would you give yours?
Oh, yes.
You'd always say it's Sophie.
Oh, yes. I mean, Why wouldn't we?
I just meant as a matter of course. Did you say Sophie here?
Yeah, or you'd say, if, you know, I can't even remember exactly what I said, but you'd probably say something like, you know, the women's information switchboard, you know, can I help you? It's Sophie speaking. Or they'd ask what their name is. Or I'd say, oh, you know, what's your name, if they'd tell me. Usually they did, you know, because while you're obviously talking, as I do now when I'm, you know, taking notes of a phone call, you try to get those sort of details. So we did keep those sorts of records. Obviously, it's, well, how many people have used the service and who's using the service, if you knew that, to take some of that.
So while you were there, talking about the internet coming in, you can't remember that the internet came in to be used at least by the clients, or even you still used the phone book and the little card system.
And I remember when, there used to be the community information, the overall body, they produced a directory. And so we used, like, for, you know, if someone lived, I don't know, in some suburb and they were looking for some particular service in particular in or near their suburb, we often, you know, you'd go, that was one of your reference documents. Mm-hmm. Any other sort of directories that we had, I remember that well because it had a yellow cover sort of small thing with, you know, a ring folder, and so, you know... It was all hard copy stuff. You know, we didn't Google anything. I've got to say, when I did go to, I'm not sure, or was it when I was, before, I think it was before WIS was located in Grenfell Street. It was somewhere else and it was all glass. Was it in the station arcade
or
something? Yes, it
was the top of the escalators in the station arcade.
And I could see that there were computers there and people could actually go. And I thought, oh, wow, things are fantastic. Things have really changed. That people could go in and use a computer there and do all that, whereas, no, we didn't have that.
I wanted to talk to you now about your work in the community, which we touched on because of your being the Greek information officer. Mm. But did you go to outreach things like rural Greek organisations?
We didn't go afar. As I said, it was generally like, say, you know, it might have been a Greek women's auxiliary group or something that, you know, either, I don't know, may or may not have had some connection with their local church. If they had a coffee morning or something like that for Greek women. But it was really limited to metro area. I did not ever do country visits or anything like that to, you know, go and, you know, speak to women or... You know,
did you have pamphlets that you maybe took to places, or were you, was that the time before the pamphlets?
I think we had. I do recall there was some information that was available in and about the service in languages other than English. So there would have been something in Greek and Italian. And I think when Lynn came on board, you know, in Vietnamese, and I'm not sure, there may have been other. So we must have had something that we did give people, yeah. But what that exactly looked like now, I can't recall.
What were you the most important issues for women? Can you remember some of those?
Well,
at that time,
look, I think, as I recall it, there was quite a lot around social security for women.
In what way do you mean that? Their income, their...
Yeah, I mean, there were obviously women who were either And let me just put this in a bit of context. I recall at the time we did have, for example, also a Greek welfare centre that was aligned with the Greek community. And they also, you know, offered a social work type service to people as well. And I think quite often we did get some referrals as well from that that sort of service. Not that there were, the Greek welfare centre was probably one of them, whether there was another one as well, because at that time the Greek community and the church, there was a split. So we had the Greek community and we had the archdiocese. I don't know how that split's going now, but in any event, so they were employed by, the social worker was employed by the Greek community. And but, you know, if people who were older and, you know, things like being on a pension or a disability pension, that sort of thing, and if they were having an issue with social work, and this was before the Welfare Rights Centre was set up. And I think I did mention when you and I spoke, Caroline, that one of the WIS workers, Maggie, and I honestly wish I could remember her surname, but she was instrumental. She was one of the people who was basically one of the founders or setting people to establish the Welfare Rights Centre here in South Australia, which was obviously really fantastic in terms of advocacy in respect of social security issues and legislation, because that's, you know, such a complex and huge area. So, you know, if, as I recall, you know, if I attended a meeting at, you know, one of the social security offices, I think usually in town, because I don't remember people asking me to come out. I can't even recall how that was set up then. Of course, now we've got offices sort of everywhere, but, you know, to interpret for them. And, you know, I also might have gone to a lawyer's appointment as
so
well.
So legal, so yeah, you've got legal, social services or legal, income.
Yeah.
Legal.
Yeah. And I think it was certainly... you know, DV was also an issue.
How did you go on accommodation?
Well, again, that, you know, I mean, in terms of, and I suppose really at that sort of time when you had emergency accommodation, it would be either, you know, through the DV service, we would either, you know, take the woman to the DV service that then organised accommodation, because that's what they did. I suppose really all we could do is say, well, we have to be speaking to this service to help you with accommodation. And so it was either a referral, you know, you've got to ring this person on this number. And of course those services had people who also, you know, were able to speak Greek to the woman or, you know, another language.
Were you fairly confident if someone rang up and said, I must leave because of domestic abuse and take my children, that they would find accommodation in those days?
Actually, I was, yes. In those days, yes. And I don't know, I honestly don't know what the situation is now, but yes, in those days, absolutely confident.
Do you know about the Women's Information Service or Switchboard Support Group? Have you ever heard of them? Did you work with them or have any understanding what they did?
Look, I've honestly got to say, I may have heard the support group, and I don't know if that involved And I'd be thinking of years ago. I don't know if that involved, you know, women who volunteered at the service, who also brought in others from other services to meet, to, you know, to support the, you know, service. My recollection of that is that it was a forum for women who were committed to the work of the service, and, you know, obviously passionate about women's issues and clearly all those issues that go along with it, equality, you know, discrimination, and all the rest of it, that they came together. Look, I can't remember whether there was one then, when it was actually set up. I think it did exist.
Well, they're there to support you, and so I guess. But you also always had the coordinator to go to if there was conflict or if there was some area that you needed some sort of clarification on. The women's information switchboard, or at least the service, had several phone-ins on women's issues.
We did.
Could you tell us anything about them in your time there?
I'm just trying to think of which phone-in. I certainly recall being involved in a phone-in. But what was the issue? Honestly, I can't remember what the issue was. I don't know if it was accommodation.
Or domestic violence, one of the big issues.
Yeah, there was and we did that, the phone-in happened on the weekend. So it was either a Saturday and Sunday that, you know, and obviously there'd been some advertising, we're having phone-in on this, and so phone-in during these hours, you know. But I can't remember. It was obviously an issue of importance. You may know that we did have a legal advice service every Saturday afternoon.
No, I was going to ask you that when you were talking about on the phones, did you have some link-up service that you could put women
through
to?
We had a roster of solicitors who gave their time voluntarily. So really they were a volunteer. And for a couple of hours on a Saturday afternoon, and they took calls, you know, to provide legal advice to women who called for legal advice, and it was a roster system, so I can't recall how many women lawyers were on that roster, but they, you know, I don't know, they came around every 4 weeks or whatever it was, you know, on a Saturday.
And you could put the client directly through to whoever was on the roster.
That person physically sat in, you know, at one of the desks with a phone. And if...
That person came into the...
Physically came in to Kintore Avenue and took calls from there.
Would they be sufficiently occupied?
Yes.
There's enough work for them to do.
Yes. Because people knew that service existed as well. So, the phone sometimes ran really hot.
Would people would come in to see the person or not?
Well, it was really meant to be a telephone service. Yeah, because, I mean, the concern was that, you know, you could easily spend probably... a long time with one person, but I guess also because the obviously the lawyers worked for other people, and if the matter was really needed, you know, some ongoing, what we would then do is we had, we'd say, well, you might want to see this lawyer or this lawyer, you know, give some names, and because, you know, which is, I think, what they did as well, obviously. But it was a service by phone, just to give some advice, legal
advice. I've heard of another service that you did sort of as a child contact centre sometimes. Oh. So can you tell us anything about that?
Well, actually, when I was there, it had been the case that the switchboard or the premise or the office was used as like the handover place. But I don't think it happened a lot. And again, I think, you know, for reasons of, you had to consider, I suppose, safety. I think a lot of handovers have happened at police stations or in front of police stations, because at least, you know, people feel, well, if anything happens and this, you know, if the ex-partner or whatever gets violent, I've got the police right here. But yes, it did actually happen there. It may have happened more before my time though there.
Well, Sophie, it's been wonderful talking to you. Have you got anything else you'd like to bring up about the highlights or lowlights of your time working at the Women's Information Switchboard? You've certainly filled us in on a lot of historical things.
Look, I have really, really good, strong, fond memories of some of the women who worked at the switchboard as volunteers, who were wonderful women. They were fantastic women, and I know in a couple of cases they've left us some time ago. I can honestly say that they did a wonderful job. They were really, I respected, their commitment, and I'm not saying I worked with fantastic women who worked there in a paid capacity. Including, women who, lesbian women who also were, that was a place that you could, and at that time too, it wasn't easy sort of to work in those sort of fields, but it was becoming to have WIST, to have the women's health centres, so women could come to those services and feel, that they belong there and that they, would be assisted and supported. So, honestly, it was a really fantastic time. I very much enjoyed the work I did there, and hopefully I was able to help a few women.
Do you think it changed your way that your life went? Do you think it added to you?
I think it did. I believed I was a feminist before I started working at the Women's Information Switchboard, and for me it was an extension of that and a consolidation and a building and a all of that. In that way, the absolute best environment to be working in, really.
On that note,
and
thank
going
you,
to the International Women's Day marches with all these, wonderful women from the women. We had our banner, and so it was great.
That's a lovely note to finish on. Thank you very much for talking to
me. My pleasure. Sophie Rose. Thank you.